Hello everybody, Mom's Mom, and this is Mom's Gotta Talk for Thursday, 4th of May, 2023. Another Thursday episode, but hey, it's also May the 4th, that's Star Wars Day, in case you're wondering. May the 4th, may the Force be with you, in that matter. But yeah, other than that, this week's episode, we got plenty of things to talk about. Firstly, Motorola's got some new phones, and the latest sort of rumor about the Apple Watch. Might want to stick around for that. That's quite interesting. Plus, more details about the Google Pixel Fold and 7a, including finally Google announcing that they're going to show off the Pixel Fold. It's coming, guys. So that's the interesting thing. We're going to get to that later on. And yeah, so many things to talk about. So without further ado, let's get rolling, shall we? All right, so first up is Motorola, or specifically Lenovo. They've shown up some new phones this past week, including the latest Moto G phone, the Moto Edge Plus, which is interesting, and we're going to talk about that a bit in detail. First is basically generally the Moto G. Apparently, Motorola focused pretty much more on consumer needs, and that means that they've added bumped-up cameras and a stylus instead of, say, a higher-res display. So to start with, you have a you got a 720p 120Hz 6.5-inch display instead of, again, a full HD or quad HD. But then again, people are not going to tell the difference, so that's pretty interesting. But a smoother display will come in handy. On top of that, you have the Snapdragon 480 Plus chip, which is pretty interesting, instead of the Dimensity 700 on the previous Moto G. And that means this phone comes with 5G capabilities, which is the biggest selling point, and that's in the name pretty much. As for cameras, you get a 40 megapixel main and 2 megapixel macro camera at the back. Again, being quite practical and not going for way too many bells and whistles like other competing phones in this price segment, along with the 8 megapixel selfie camera. Again, that should get the job done, let's just say that. But yeah, you get a 5,000 mAh battery, 4GB of RAM. I think you, at this point, Motorola should offer at least 1.5 times more RAM. 6 or 8GB of RAM would make sense. 128GB of storage, and even microSD card slot, which you don't get on most phones these days, which gives you a storage all the way up to 1TB. So that's pretty interesting in the way. And I would want to make a correction here midway through. This Moto G does not have a stylus. That actually is for the second Moto G phone, that is the Moto G Stylus. Now, if you ever dreamt of having an S Pen S kind of phone, you know, the S23 Ultra, but you don't have the money for it, you're broke, literally, the Moto G Stylus is an interesting phone. You definitely want to check out. So, starting off, you have a 6.5-inch display. It's 120Hz HD Plus, so it's a slightly bumped up, hopefully beyond 1080p. On top of that, you have 4GB of RAM and 128GB of storage. A MediaTek G85 processor should do you the job. Decent chip for your WhatsApping and content consumption and all those sort of things. But it comes as stylus, and that's pretty interesting. You don't get this on budget phones usually. So if you are the kind to use your phone with a stylus, you definitely want to check this out. But yeah, you get a 8 megapixel selfie cam on the front, a 50 megapixel sensor on the back, and that macro camera, hopefully, because a lot of budget phones do come with macro cameras usually instead of an ultra wide. It's cheap to add, and also for some people it's fun to have a camera that lets you take detailed close-up shots, so that's pretty cool in a way. On top of everything, you also get a 5000 mAh battery with 15 watt fast charging, so that's pretty cool in a way. And like the Moto G, the stylus does not have NFC, so that's a bit of a bummer if you use contactless payments, that is. But if you are looking for an affordably priced flagship, you could spend a whole lot more for a Motorola phone. You might want to check out the Motorola Edge Plus, the latest Moto Edge Plus. Now, fun fact, and this is a little bit of a side story here. I went to a famous hypermarket chain. I'm not going to put up name over here right now, but I just asked the salesperson, I was like, do you have a phone? Do you have a Snapdragon 8 Gen 2 phone, a flagship, really, a fast chip, but it's not like over $1,000. It's not over $900 or $1,000 or $1,200. And the person's response was like, no, we just have the S23 Ultra. We just have the S23 only. And it's so conflicting, you know, like, there are phones you have between in Bahrain specifically, you got phones you can get for $700 roughly, or $600, $500-$600 phones, and they literally are just like lightweighty-esque kind of phones. I'm talking the A54, of course, not the A74, the A54 probably. And that phone's comfortably over $600 starting price. That's including markups and stuff. So there's no phone with top-notch chips and cameras. Good news, Lenovo's got you covered here. The Moto Edge Plus comes with the Snapdragon 8 Gen 2, a curved display, 6.7-inch Full HD Plus POLED display, 165 Hz refresh rate, and again, quite surprising for the price here. Interestingly, the phone features Gorilla Glass Victus on the front and back, speaking of the screen and the back. On top of that, you have 50-megapixel main camera on the back, 2 micrometers of sensor size. OIS is available, which is surprising. 50-megapixel ultra-wide slash macro, so you can do double duty. Pretty much that's cool in a way. And 12-megapixel sensor with 2x telephoto lens. A 60-megapixel selfie camera on the front. So they're packing quite a lot of punch for a phone that's not $1,000. So that's one hint I'm going to give here. You have a 5,100 mAh battery, 68-watt wired fast charging, 15-watt wireless fast charging. So quite surprising, again, when you look at the price pretty much. And you're going to be surprised when I mention it here. And yes, it has NFC in case you're wondering. Now, let's talk about the price here. The Moto Edge Plus, this latest version pretty much from Lenovo, will set you back, get this, $800 for the base spec, pretty much, which is, I would assume, 128 gigabytes for a phone of this caliber and price. $800 for a flagship. Now, it's kind of unheard of. Now, if you can put it side by side with the S23, more or less the same if you think about it, but it's not a bad price if you think about it. When you get a curved display, Snapdragon 8 Gen 2, and really cameras that are should be decent for the price. But yeah, you're getting a top-notch display, camera, and processor, and probably battery life for $800. So right up there with starting out with your baseline Pixel and at the S23. So again, it's good to have more options. And again, if this goes on sale, it would basically be a lot better value than the S23 potentially. So yeah, this really is the phone to get. And whereas the other ones, it's fine. In case you're wondering, the Moto G starts at $200, which is not bad, $199. So kind of a low-end phone at that price. The Moto G Stylus, on the other hand, starts from $249. Oh, okay, I mixed it up actually. The Moto G 5G is $250, and the G Stylus is $200. So that's pretty interesting in a way. One interesting thing I want to add is the Moto Edge Plus. That's known in the US as the Edge Plus, but in Europe, it's pretty much known as the Edge 40 Pro. So this is something to keep in mind. I think this is what it would be called in the Middle East too, in Bahrain specifically, if Motorola does sell their phones here. And they don't sell their phones here, that's for sure. But if it was available, it would have been called the Edge 40 Pro. So that's an interesting name compared to Edge Plus, which is kind of confusing already. That is. Now, one thing I'd want to add about software updates, the Moto G 5G and this G Stylus, the 2023 variant, you get one major upgrade software-wise, and you get 3 years of security updates, which is kind of lagging when you compare to the competition, where they kind of do give longer update cycles for software specifically. I'm looking at you, Samsung. I mean, they give probably much better software support in a way. Whereas the Edge Plus will come with 3 major Android upgrades and 4 years of security patches, pretty much. So that again should be assuring given what you're paying. But yeah, the Moto G Stylus, as it's known, is already going to be available from tomorrow, May 5th, whereas the Edge Plus will be available on May 25th, so is the Moto G 5G. That'll be available in stores from May 25th in the US. So that's pretty cool in a way. And while we're already talking about Motorola phones, let's talk about the Moto Edge 40, which again is the slightly inferior brother to the Edge 40 Pro or the Edge Plus in the US. So this one again is a little bit different. It has a 6.55-inch 144 Hz POLED display, but with a resolution of 2400 by 1080. A Dimensity 820 chip, so that's something to keep in mind. On top of that, you have a 4,440 mAh battery, has a rhyme to it pretty much. 68 watt fast charging and 15 watts of wireless fast charging. So that's pretty cool in a way. 8 gigabytes of RAM and 256 gigabytes of storage. IP68 water and dust resistance. No mention of dust resistance, but it probably is there if it's IP68 rated. But yeah, you get a MediaTek chip instead of a Qualcomm, but then the real benefit, the price, it starts at, this is available in the UK right now and Europe, so it's around 530 British pounds. So it's a little bit cheaper than the Edge 40 Pro or Edge Plus as it is. There's no information about this phone coming to the US, but I'd probably expect that they're going to eventually have to bring it over to the US. But I think it would dilute the sales of the Edge Plus or the Edge 40 Pro if they release this one. So not really surprising if they brought out that other phone first instead of this one. But yeah, pretty interesting phones from Motorola, nonetheless. And while we're already talking about new phones, let's talk about some upcoming phones. The Razr 40 Ultra, which is the folding flip phone from Motorola, the latest in the Razr lineup, since Motorola has been making folding flip phones in the past couple of years. And this one will be pulling all the stops, pretty much, given what we're hearing. And there'll be a regular and an Ultra variant. And the Ultra, apparently, according to XDA developers, will be coming with a Snapdragon 8 Plus Gen 1 chip, 512 gigabytes of storage, 12 gigabytes of RAM, a 2640 by 1080 inner display AMOLED with HDR and 120Hz refresh rate instead of 144Hz refresh rate like most people have been suggesting. An AR display that apparently will be 1056 by 1066. So that's pretty interesting in a way. And again, comes with a dual sensors on the back. And now there'll be a main 12 megapixel Sony IMX563 and a 13 megapixel ultrawide sensor. But a sensor that I've never heard of, but it sounds interesting in a way. But it's going to be the wide-angle sensor, like on the Z Flip phones from Samsung. So that's pretty cool in a way. Along with that, you have a 32-megapixel selfie camera, NFC support, a fingerprint sensor, probably on the power button, as always. Dual SIM and eSIM support, so that's kind of new in a way. And it will come in a whole bunch of colors. Barberry, so that'll be a maroonish kind of color. Black and blue. So that's pretty cool in a way. And again, like previous rumors, Motorola could be launching, will hopefully be launching these phones on June the 1st. That'll be kind of exciting in a way. And it'll be available all over the world, so that'll be pretty interesting in a way. But it has one interesting party trick that it's looking to offer, and that is the ability, the AR display will be able to run a whole bunch of apps, not all apps, because obviously it'll be a little funny if it happens to be the case, but it'll be able to run a whole bunch of apps on the AR display that will be optimized, and you'll be able to see more than just the time and notifications. And I think also if it has a large AR display like other folding flip phones, you should be able to use it as a viewfinder for a camera, so that will be pretty interesting. That is, so can't wait for this phone, pretty much. While we're already talking about phones that might be coming fairly soon, Sony is planning to show off its latest flagship smartphone, the Xperia 1 5, Mark 5, and Sony has released a video, released a teaser video, where they're going to be showing off the Xperia 1 5 on May the 11th, a whole day after Google I.O. and Google's new Pixels, so that'll be pretty interesting in a way. And the event will kind of be live streamed at midnight Eastern time, so if you're curious, and it'll be on their YouTube channel. Now, I think the Xperia 1 Mark 5 will basically have Sony's best ever cameras and a Snapdragon 8 Gen 2, so not surprising in a way, but it'll be interesting to see how they compete with the likes of the Pixel 8 series and the S23 series, which is what it really is up against. And yeah, switching over to smartwatches and Apple devices for a hot moment. Mark Gurman from Bloomberg has reported that Apple is looking to offer a big change with watchOS 10, which is the OS on Apple's smartwatches, the Apple Watch generally. According to Gurman, quote, the plan is to let users scroll through a series of different widgets for activity tracking, weather, stock tickers, calendar appointments, and more, rather than having them launch apps. The new interface will be available as an overlay for any watch face, according to the report. So that's pretty interesting in a way. And basically what they're planning to do is instead of having a whole lot of big fat apps on the Apple Watch, which hasn't really worked necessarily. Lots of developers have stopped making Apple Watch apps because they haven't brought anything to the table, and people don't really use their watches way too much as people thought before. Instead, they're looking to prioritize widgets as the new way to interface on the Apple Watch. And it's kind of similar to old school watches and complications. If you ever had a wristwatch, a very fancy one, a $50,000 one, or a $100 wristwatch, you know those complications where you could see the you can measure, you could see, you have timer, you can see the day and date. And this is quite similar, pretty much. The Apple has been Apple has offered complications and little bits you can add to your watch face, so you can see all kinds of information, see new messages, you can press buttons. But this is different. This one, it's kind of similar to what you already have on the iPhone with widgets that have on your home screen, and this is more or less the same. But it seems interesting that they're now looking to prioritize widgets. Design-wise, is basically the way to, you know, do more on your Apple Watch instead of just, you know, do activity tracking and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, apparently the digital crown also, again, also on top of that, Gurman goes on to say that Apple's also looking to change the function of the digital crown instead of just being a way to navigate and rather let you access different widgets and get you through the screen, home screen. So that's pretty interesting in a way. It's a bit of a bold change. It's a big change that Apple's looking to do with the Apple Watch. And we'll see during WWDC if they do make a change to the interface. I think we'll add some. It'll make it unique and fresh, and change up the Apple Watch for once. Because again, people don't use their smartwatches as much as we like to assume, and people have them on for a few reasons, including fitness tracking. And if you have an Apple Watch, you use it for Apple Pay and fitness tracking and things like that that are kind of necessary. You don't want to take your phone out sometimes. So that's pretty interesting in a way. Right, we're already talking about rumors. Let's talk about Samsung. Apparently, Ice Universe on Twitter has reportedly stated that Samsung's Z Flip 5 will be coming with an hour display, roughly 720 by 748, that's about 3.4 inches with a pixel density of 305 ppi, along with a picture reportedly showing the hour display. It will sort of be meaning basically a whole glass back, start to finish, and sort of this kind of large hour display covering sort of the length of the display at the top, but sort of tapering at the bottom toward around the cameras. That's pretty interesting, and that kind of means Samsung maybe looking to bring a big hour display, given that we're getting a lot of folding flip phones with large hour displays. And large hour displays are kind of fun to start with. And we go again, Oppo and Vivo have folding flip phones with large sort of, again, where the outdoor display has large screen real estate, and you can do quite a lot of things, as I've said already. Useful as a camera viewfinder, you can, you know, run the timer, you could see messages, you can respond and run some apps in the background. So that's pretty interesting in a way, but this is quite significant from a small little square, from a small when you look at the Z Flip 4, you have a sort of a square, a bottom square rectangle-ish, all the way to a large 3.4 inch display. So it'll be a pretty big jump for a lot of people, and if you think about it, you can do quite a lot more. So that's pretty interesting in a way. All right, it's official. A few hours ago, Google posted a bit of a teaser showing off the Pixel Fold in full, the inside and the outside. Apparently, we've gotten so many leaks that it's not worth it waiting to Google I.O. to see the surprise. So they sort of showed it off in full, and with the cute message, because it's May the 4th, may the Fold be with you. Pretty cool. And yeah, the Pixel Fold is real. It's going to be happening. And it's going to be coming on May the 10th during Google I.O. So can't wait for this folding device. It's a bit of a chonky boy if you look at its overall from the pictures and from the short video here. But will you be getting this over the Galaxy Z Fold 5? Let me know. But other than that, it's an interesting device, pretty much. All right, well, we're already talking about Google Pixels in general. The Pixel phone won't be the only phone shown off at Google I.O. On top of all the software updates and stuff like that, the Pixel 7a might purportedly be coming on Google pretty much next week. And basically, Google India sort of tweeted that the Pixel 7a, they didn't mention the phone generally, but the picture kind of looks faintly like the Pixel 7a, and apparently it'll be coming on May the 11th to Flipkart, so you'll be able to purchase it online the following day after Google I.O. So that's pretty cool in a way. And also on top of the fact that the Pixel 7a will be available in India too, so that's pretty interesting in a way. But more than everything, Roland Quand from WinFuture, has posted a picture showing the difference really between the Pixel 7a and the 6a. And the 6a is a pretty cool phone already on its own, but the 7a will come with a whole bunch of upgrades, purportedly. So you have the same display, you've got the same camera features, more or less. You now have wireless charging, the Google Tensor G2 chip, and a 64 megapixel wide camera, regular, and a 13 megapixel ultra wide angle camera on the back, and a 13 megapixel selfie camera on the front. That's going to be a big jump compared to the Pixel 6a. So that's the interesting thing that is mentioned in this spec sheet. So it's pretty interesting. And basically, the marketing material for the Pixel 7, it's kind of been leaked in full, so no surprises here already. But pretty some interesting things. You won't be getting a charging plug in the box, so that's something to keep in mind. And it's going to have the Tensor G2 chip, and it's going to have all the camera features that Pixels are known for. So that's pretty interesting. So there's nothing left to imagination at this point with the Pixel 7a. So are you excited for the Pixel 7a? Are you going to cop one when it launches later this month? Do let me know. I'd love to hear your thoughts. But yeah, the Pixel 7a has kind of been leaked in full. But also the Pixel Buds have kind of been shown off. Have kind of been leaked again. But I think this will just be a new color variant of the Pixel Buds A series. I don't think this is necessarily a new Pixel Buds A, but it could be a new one, potentially. It might be a color refresh, it would just be a blue color. So we're not going to touch much more upon that. But yeah, it's really just a color refresh, so it's not going to change the game, let's just say that. But we're already talking about phones in general. This next one, this is going to also be launching next week, but it's pretty interesting. The Poco F5 and F5 Pro. But the interesting part is that the F5 specifically is a Poco phone that you'll definitely want to get, because it's actually based on a phone that I kind of talked about many, many months back, the Redmi Note 12 Power, is it? Or Turbo? Yeah, the Note 12 Turbo. And I rightfully, for some reason, I nearly predicted, just listen to what I said a few months back. I'll roll the clip. A Redmi Note 12 Turbo, like people who are thinking of a Note 12 Pro, they're going to end up running for this. So I have a hunch that they're going to badge this under the Poco brand, and they're going to obviously mark it up a little bit to around $400 or $500, because it looks exciting. And
okay, I'm not going to pretend like I'm some sort of genius. I kind of felt that they were going to do this down the road, and we're going to get global variants of these phones, so that's pretty cool in a way. So the Poco F5 is obviously should be based on the Redmi Note 12 Turbo, and the F5 Pro, that'll be the much faster variant of the F5, will basically be a rebadged Redmi K60, so that's pretty cool in a way, and they'll be showing them off next week, so again, can't wait for that. Interestingly enough, we're getting teasers obviously since the announcement. The Poco F5 Pro will apparently be coming with a WQHD Plus display. It's flat, it's not curved, so that's one interesting teaser from the folks at Poco. They're probably hyping these phones pretty hard, so there must be something good inside them, hopefully. So yeah, hopefully these are going to be some pretty exciting phones nonetheless. But while we're already talking about technology in general, let's talk about Samsung. And apparently, they've banned tools like ChatGPT because apparently, according to Bloomberg, employees have been found to be uploading internal source codes. And when you talk to ChatGPT and you notice very well, you say I have a bug or issue, you sort of copy an example. You know, you could give it a prompt like, "Oh, assume you're an experienced programmer. Da da da. This code has da da da. It's giving this error. Give a response." And employees at Samsung have been doing that with ChatGPT and other tools potentially, and now they've banned the use of these tools because they might be sharing sensitive information in this regard. So that's pretty interesting. Apparently they've announced a new policy where they essentially have banned the use of generative AI systems on company-owned phones, computers, and tablets, as well as over the intranet at their offices. So that's pretty interesting in a way. I would want to note that this does not affect personally users who want to use these AI tools on Samsung devices is a totally separate matter. If you're a consumer, if you own and use Samsung devices, you can totally use all the AI you want in the world. This is only for internal employees of those working at Samsung's several companies, including programmers and stuff like that. So that's pretty interesting in a way. And Samsung's apparently not the only company to be running out and banning ChatGPT over the fact that it could be the users could essentially be sending and sharing sensitive information, or essentially leaking out information over to OpenAI servers. Lots of banks have sort of banned its use. Lots of other tech companies have kind of stepped in. Heck, Stack Overflow has like banned posts where you essentially where the answers are coming straight from ChatGPT. They've had to do that because a lot of people find it very easy to ask this AI chatbot to give you answers to things because it's so comprehensive and to the point. So that's pretty interesting in a way. And that's not surprising pretty much. But also Samsung, again, states the fact that if you use these chatbots, you're going to be sharing information that you shouldn't be sharing, frankly, to anyone, not even a chatbot, because they could use it to train their models potentially. And that's the problem. If as a company, if you have sensitive or confidential information using these things like ChatGPT, in a way, you're essentially sending stuff to them and they can use it to train it, and other people would have access to essentially a slither of it. And it's quite interesting, like, because in the past couple of weeks too, on top of that, some person managed to make an entire song, basically Drake in the Weeknd on legs, but actually it wasn't that. It was just like an AI generated song, but it raised a pretty big sort of controversy, rightfully so, because of copyright, when voices of artists could essentially be copied and sampled and trained, and AI models can be trained, and essentially you could create entire songs with their voice. And that's one, that's copyright, pretty much, somebody, and manipulation, pretty much. What about company data and sending it really to OpenAI? So this policy kind of makes sense, and they've set a precedent already, but yeah. On top of that, apparently Bloomberg states also that Samsung is now kind of working on its own internal AI chatbot, so you can sort of, again, to help with translation and summarizing documents, and for software development to fix bugs and stuff like that. That's pretty interesting in a way. But mistakes happen. But as I said, now they've set a precedent, and a lot of companies can kind of take some notes over from Samsung. So that's pretty interesting in a way. What do you think? If you run a software company or just any other kind of business and you have sensitive information, would you allow your employees to use ChatGPT? I'd love to know your thoughts. All the contact details are in the show notes.
All right, I'm going to give you a bit of a heads up. WhatsApp now allows you to link your main WhatsApp account onto 5 separate phones on top of the one you have. But it's pretty interesting in a way, and all get stay connected to WhatsApp, and you can again have end-to-end encryption for those messages and calls and voice notes. So that's pretty cool in a way. But as I said, if your primary phone's been inactive, then it will automatically log out. So that's pretty cool in a way. Now you can use one WhatsApp account on multiple devices, on multiple phones at a time. So it's funny, if you have 5 different iPhones and you have your WhatsApp on an Android phone, so you can essentially link up your other phones to that main WhatsApp account, and you can again access all your messages and information. This is kind of similar to how you could already access WhatsApp on your computer and tablet by using WhatsApp web and the app, so you can sort of link up your phone and get access to all your messages and calls. So that's pretty cool in a way. It's something to really take advantage of if you have WhatsApp, and again, you happen to have multiple devices. So that's pretty cool in a way. And moving on to EVs, Rimac, the famous supercar manufacturer, famous for their Nevera electric supercar, has just launched a new energy business, which will essentially build batteries and energy storage systems. So this basically is a new division of the Rimac group in general, on top of their joint venture with Porsche and their main iconic automotive company that is making supercars on its own. And this division consists of 60 employees who are kind of working on stationary energy storage systems and pilot projects with select companies. And apparently they've designed a electrical architecture which apparently gives you up to 50% reduced energy losses and 40% smaller system footprint. And we'll get to hear more about it later in the year as they obviously show off their first ever sort of system that basically is batteries and transistors that again will deliver clean power to users of all sizes, from businesses to residential and all kinds of use cases. And again, the portfolio apparently includes utility scale energy systems, storage systems, by the way, tools for commercial and industrial applications, and highly integrated battery buffered charging solutions. That basically means fast chargers, both batteries, and that give you a quick boost of power straight into the vehicle. So that's pretty cool. And battery buff fast charging would be a solution in being able to deliver reliable DC fast charging, and will probably be helpful for Rimac themselves as they're going to be launching their supercars fairly soon, and you don't want a poor charging experience ruining the experience for the car, for the driver pretty much. So that's pretty interesting in a way. And it'll be based out of their main headquarters in Croatia, but more than everything, they'll be producing high volume systems in 2025, planning to hopefully go up to 10 gigawatt hours of annual production. So that's pretty cool in a way. Now, the founder of Rimac himself, Mr. Rimac, Mate Rimac, the legend, had this to say about the launch of this energy division. There is, quote, "There's an urgent need for clean energy infrastructure to support the integration of renewable energy sources into the grid by providing storage and balancing capabilities. Given our head start in EV technology and dedication to sustainability, this path feels like a seamless progression for us. Our team is truly excited about creating solutions that make clean energy more accessible as we strive to decrease our dependence on fossil fuels and foster a greener future." And that was the words of Mr. Rimac himself. That's pretty cool in a way. And interestingly enough, it's all being done in Europe, as is in the press release, kind of giving a slight sort of hint to rivals who are obviously based in Asia, and then they have plants all over the world and they source from all over the world, whereas Rimac is doing the R&D development and then manufacturing all in Croatia potentially. So that's pretty cool in a way. And we really need all these solutions, the more the merrier, of course, because to transition away from the world of fossil fuels over to EVs and renewable energy, you really will need energy storage to sort of balance out and again account for fluctuations and differences from place to place, from circumstance to circumstance, if that's even a word to start with. So again, cool to see Rimac working on these solutions. The most interesting thing I've sort of heard about from this is the whole battery buff fast charging. It's pretty interesting because, as I said, Rimac is making supercars, and if you don't have rock solid store charging, these cars are, you know, are really paperweights, let's just say. And so if you really could design in-house the charging to be fast and solid and really just plug it in and literally get half of the car's charge back in like an hour, it'll be very useful and again worthwhile. So again, pretty cool stuff coming out of Rimac nonetheless. Alrighty, this leaves us to the end of this week's episode. What do you think of everything you've heard today so far? The Pixel Fold's coming next week, the F5 phones. Let me know. I'm on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at Sade_Mao99. Follow me there if you can. It's all in the show notes in case you missed it. Subscribe wherever you're listening right now. Don't forget to share this podcast to your friends and family. Forward it on WhatsApp if you can. Leave a review on Apple, and I'll be wonderful in a way. Gotta bump up those ratings eventually. But yeah, till next week, this is your Bo Moment signing out. Wherever you are, whatever you're up to, have a wonderful day ahead and have a wonderful week ahead. And yeah, thank you for listening. And again, have an awesome day. Ciao.